In my family, we prioritize sitting down and having dinner together every single night. But finding the time to plan meals, do the shopping, and cook from scratch can feel overwhelming. That is where Gobble comes in. Gobble is a meal kit delivery service where each week you can choose from their rotating menu of over 18 gourmet meals. You can mix and match from classic recipes, lean and clean recipes, and vegetarian options, and Gobble will deliver them right to your door. We recently had a Gobble meal of Baja-style fish tacos with green goddess cabbage slaw and spiced black beans. Hear me when I say it was delicious. And that's because Gobble menus are designed by professional chefs. You'll experience a huge range of global flavors and fun gourmet ingredients that make you feel like a pro chef without making a single trip to the store. The meal was super easy to come together because most of their meals only take about 20 minutes. And did I mention how good the chocolate chip cookies were for dessert? See what a difference Gobble will make for your household. Right now, they're offering my listeners a fantastic limited time deal. Get $120 off across four boxes, plus free shipping and free cookies. Go to gobble.com/Dr. Nicole. That's GOBBLE.com/Dr. Nicole today. This offer is not available on their home site, so don't miss out. How do you feel joy after a difficult labor and birth that didn't go at all the way you expected? You'll learn how in today's birth story episode with Martha. Welcome to the All About Pregnancy and Birth podcast. If you're having a baby in the hospital, you are giving birth in a system that too often takes away power from women over what happens in their own bodies. I'm Dr. Nicole Calloway Rankins, a practicing board-certified OBGYN who's had the privilege of helping well over 1,000 babies into this world. I've been a doctor for over 20 years, and I'm here to help you take back your power, advocate for yourself, and have the beautiful pregnancy and birth that you deserve. This podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not a substitute for medical advice. Check out the full disclaimer at drnicolerankins.com/disclaimer. Now let's get to it. Hello there. Welcome to another episode of the podcast. This is episode number 274. Whether it is your first time listening or you've been here before, I'm so grateful that you're spending some time with me today. In today's birth story episode, we have Martha. Martha hoped and really prepared for a low intervention birth with hospital midwives. She ended up being induced at 41 weeks and 3 days due to concerns about her baby's heart rate on a non-stress test. She was in labor for 40 hours and experienced nearly every intervention that she had not wanted during that induction, some of which were hard on her and others of which were hard on her baby. She labored for about 35 hours through 2 nights without an epidural and used nitrous oxide for pain relief before getting an epidural about 5 hours before a non-emergent but medically recommended cesarean birth. The C-section itself was not traumatic, but it was unwanted, and she experienced a lot of grief over the loss of the birthing experience that she wanted. Now, despite that emotional roller coaster, her postpartum experience was actually quite joyful. She had a positive and successful breastfeeding journey, and she felt incredibly bonded with her baby from the second she was born. Martha's story is an example of how joyful and easy postpartum experiences are possible, even when the journey to birth is very challenging. And we are going to get into all of the details of how she was able to do that in this episode today. Now, quick reminder before we dive into the episode, I'm teaching my birth plan class live coming up soon. If you want a birth plan that actually works to help you have the birth that you want, you don't want to miss it. Grab your spot in the next free live class at drnicolerankins.com/birth plan. All right, let's get into the birth story episode with Martha. Martha. Thanks so much, Martha, for agreeing to come onto the podcast. I'm excited to have you share your story and, you know, the challenges that came with it and how you overcame those challenges.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to share.
Yeah, so why don't you start off by telling us a bit about yourself and your family?
Yeah, so I'm in my early, less early by the day, but 30s. And I live in the Twin Cities area of Minneapolis with my husband and our daughter. She just turned one. Yeah, we love living here. We love getting outside. And we recently actually just got back from our first overnight camping trip with our daughter, which is something that we love to do before we had her.
Aww.
And finally got back out there and she did great. It was awesome.
Oh, that's really sweet. That really sounds fun. Yeah. I don't know that I could do the cold weather that I think you experienced there.
Yeah, we have extremes. So okay. As cold as it is in the summer, in the winter, it's hot in the summer.
Okay.
And both of those come into play in my pregnancy, like super cold and super hot. So
gotcha.
Spans the breadth of it.
Yeah. So speaking of your pregnancy, why don't we get into your pregnancy? Because in order to understand the birth, we got to understand a little bit about the pregnancy. So what was your pregnancy and prenatal care like? Did you see a doctor, a midwife? How did things go during your pregnancy?
Yeah. So I was pretty sick during pregnancy at the beginning and then also at the end.
Okay.
And I was sick really early on, and I was really sick. I found out I was pregnant really early, like before I missed my period. We knew that we were open to pregnancy.
Sure.
And so I found out, you know, at like 3 weeks or whatever. And by like 5 or 6 weeks, I was throwing up like all day, every day. It was rough. I listened to your podcast on hyperemesis recently, what you had like a guest on maybe a while back, but she said like, this is beyond like the nausea that you can have a piece of ginger and it goes away. Like this is constantly being on the verge of throwing up. And that's really how it was for me. It was pretty tough. And I had to like work through it too. I was, fortunately, like working a hybrid kind of corporate job post-COVID with some flexibility for working from home. And so I just worked from home as much as I could. But I was sick constantly. And we tried all sorts. We tried the Unisum and B6 combo. Mm-hmm. We tried, I mean, I threw up so much ginger that I just stopped trying. You know, in the early days, it was almost manageable with like diet and that, but it pretty quickly became like I couldn't keep anything down. I did try acupuncture. Like I tried like everything I could before, you know, kind of the next intervention, which is pretty much the theme for how my birth went also, but I did end up on Zofran. I think I was on like the 8 milligram dose a couple times a day through I stayed on it through my entire pregnancy.
Okay.
So yeah, on Zofran, it was more like I was throwing up like 2 to 3 times a day. And I was still getting pretty sick, but it was like I could get through the day with the Zofran. Those Minnesota winters, I went for long walks in just like the coldest, brisk cold. Towards the end of my first trimester when I was like well enough to get out of the house and like that cold air felt like so good for me. But it was tough. I described it to a friend as like being hungover with the stomach flu on a ship at sea in a storm. Like it was just, I was always just unsettled. It was tough.
Oh my God.
It was really tough.
Okay. So, and that did, well, I should say, did that make it hard for you to connect with your pregnancy?
You know, I've heard that it can. And for me, not really. Like pregnancy was so hard, but I loved that I was pregnant and I was like tracking the size of the baby, you know, on an app with the fruits. And I was so excited to feel the baby like move and start planning the nursery. I think that was one of the things that kind of like got me through the sickness is like in my really tough days, I would work on my registry or like, you know, think about the bigger picture. Although I will say not always. Like, I had a couple tough days. I remember, because I was going in, I was being monitored for, like, dehydration and weight loss, because I just couldn't keep anything down. And I was with hospital midwives, and the midwife was like, oh, do you want to hear the baby's heart rate? And I was like, well, is it medically necessary? And she's like, no, it would just be kind of reassuring, maybe, like, put the bright side of spin on things. And
right.
I was just like, no. Okay. I felt so bad after. I was like, no, if it's not medically necessary, I just want to go home.
Today is
like,
not the day. Yeah.
Not today. So I definitely had moments where I was like, oh my gosh, how will I ever get through this?
Okay.
But I still did feel like connected with the pregnancy. And we were waiting to find out if we had a boy or girl until birth. We were surprised at birth.
Right.
So that was kind of another fun part of it. It's just like wondering at like who this baby was.
Yeah. Yeah. That is fun. And you said you were seeing midwives.
Yes. Okay. I chose my care team actually before I got pregnant. Kind of found them by accident. I wanted to get my IUD out, which is a whole separate story of having a bad experience with the IUD. But I just took like the first available appointment at this women's clinic that was in the same clinic system that I go to for other care. And that was with a nurse midwife. And so that's how I got introduced to the hospital midwives. And it was a fit for me, like with what I wanted for birth. I wanted as low intervention as possible. Mm-hmm. And I kind of felt like midwives were a good fit for a low risk pregnancy.
Sure.
But still while also being able to birth in the hospital.
Okay. Okay. How many midwives were in the group?
Maybe 15 to 20. A lot. There was a midwife for
what?
Like,
really?
Yeah, it's a big, it's like a big production here actually. They practice across, they're kind of split between like two hospitals. And the one that I ended up going through had like 15 to 20 midwives, I think, in rotation.
Wow.
So it's a lot.
That is a very large group. I mean, that's a large group, whether it's physicians or midwives. That's a big group of providers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was.
Yeah. Okay. Did you enjoy and you felt like you got good care by the midwives during your pregnancy?
I do. I feel like I got good care. I have like some mixed reviews, actually. But
okay. Why is that?
Well, I think there were just things that kind of got missed through my pregnancy. One thing that came up at birth was that I was super anemic. And I think just going to see like all these different people, like, I was trying to meet as many of them as I could. I kind of had like one or two that I consider like my primary midwives who I felt like I was more connected with. I would go in and see these different people and they'd be interested in a different part of my chart. And, you know, one of them sent us for like a follow-up growth out ultrasound for our baby. And that was kind of like not necessary. And, you know, somebody else was interested in our amniotic fluid levels and nothing ever came of that. People would just kind of get detailed in on like one detail that they hadn't talked to me about yet. And the anemia got a little bit missed up until like the very end.
Okay.
But I was really happy with like the care team and I think everybody did their best.
Okay. So what did you do to prepare for your birth?
Yeah, what didn't I do? Yeah. I listened to I really consumed like birth stories.
Okay.
I listened to this podcast. I listened to Evidence-Based Birth.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to the Birth Hour. Mm-hmm. I read Ina May. I read Birthing from Within.
Okay.
And my husband and I took a birth class together.
Okay.
And by then, I kind of felt like I knew a lot of it. Uh-huh. But the birth class was still wonderful for, like, just that we had dedicated time together to really think about the birth and, like, what we wanted. And so it was great.
Okay.
And I hired a doula team. So with the idea that, like, one of them would be there for the birth.
Okay.
And I was really prepared to say no to like every intervention.
Okay.
And we'll talk. Couldn't. So
I was going to say it didn't exactly go that way, but
yeah, exactly.
Let me ask, at what point did you hire your doula team?
Really early, like at the end of my first trimester.
Okay.
We hired a doula team.
And then did they have a couple of visits like, or what did they do during the pregnancy to support you?
We had a couple of like video visits with them to talk through what we wanted for the birth. They came to our house at the end. The idea was to labor at home for as long as possible. And so we just kind of like went through how we're set up here and like what we could do during labor here. And they sent me a lot of just resources and support, especially at the end. I went pretty far past my due date and I was just out of my mind physically and mentally. Right, and so they were super supportive for that, like, waiting time.
Okay. Good. So what are some things that you wanted for your birth?
Yeah, I had, like, an ideal. My ideal birth was, like, I'm going to go into labor spontaneously, like, hopefully early, but I'll let it go for as long as I can.
Right.
And labor at home for as long as possible. And basically, like, show up to the hospital to have a baby. Like, okay. I didn't want, ideally, any interventions. I didn't even want an IV. Like, I wanted to just have this natural, quote, birth. I even, like, at one point considered a home birth. I was like, you know, I don't need any of the hospital interventions. I'm not going to have them. Okay. That was, like, my ideal. But I just wasn't comfortable with the home birth. We didn't seriously consider it, but we live, like, across the street from a hospital. So I was like, maybe we could do it. But I just was more comfortable in the hospital setting for myself. So,
gotcha.
Yeah. Low intervention. Wanted to go as long as I could without pain medicine or, like, without the epidural specifically.
Right.
And in particular, just wanted to avoid, like, the cascade of interventions that you hear about.
Sure.
I didn't want to end in a C-section, and I didn't want to end in an unnecessary C-section more so. So I was very focused on, like, preventing that outcome.
Okay. Now, were you open to the possibility that those things could happen, or were you just like, this is what I'm going to do, this is how it's going to go? Like, where was your mindset?
I would say it evolved as I got to the end of pregnancy, but it never, up until the end, I didn't really think about another outcome. I just, like, envisioned myself going into labor at home and, like, having this labor. Mm-hmm. I never thought that I would need to be induced, and that is what ended up happening. And I didn't consider what I would do if I had to be induced. I had heard all these birth stories, so, like, I knew what the options were. I knew what could happen. I felt very aware of, like, all the interventions that could happen and, like, why they might be recommended. But I just didn't think that I was going to get to that place.
Okay. So was there anything that you were afraid of when it came to giving birth, other than having to have all the interventions?
honestly, I feel like I went into birth kind of on the lower end of the fear spectrum. I don't know, my mom had had, we have four kids in my family. I think she had all of us, or most of us, like, unmedicated. She's like, I just wanted a Tylenol. Like, she had this, like, easy birth, I don't know,
right?
But I just didn't think that much about the birth itself being like a problem for me. I was more worried about, like, postpartum and healing, and I knew it was going to hurt. I knew it was going to be intense, but I wasn't, like, afraid of it.
Okay. Ladies, let's talk. Did you know that women's peak reproductive years are between the late teens and late 20s? Some research indicates that peak fertility among American women is age 22, with an ideal first pregnancy at age 23. Well, that just ain't realistic with most people's timelines. There are a lot of reasons why you wait to start a family. That's where Ritual comes in. Their 3-in-1 fertility support was designed in partnership with an OBGYN and a fertility specialist, and it uses clinically studied ingredients and clinically studied dosages to support conception outcomes. As an OBGYN, I trust Ritual products because they are rigorously third-party tested for heavy metals, allergens, and microbes for safety during preconception and pregnancy. Their fertility support is the first 3-in-1 drink mix formulated with clinically studied ingredients to support conception outcomes. It includes myo-inositol, which helps support egg health, promotes normal ovulation cycles, and helps support healthy hormone levels. NAC provides antioxidant support and helps support ovarian health, and CoQ10 helps support follicular health and cellular energy production. Listen, I did my own research, and these ingredients really are proven to help with fertility. So bring the fertility science back to your bedroom with 3-in-1 fertility support from Ritual. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/Dr. Nicole. That's ritual.com/Dr. Nicole for 25% off. So then what happened with your labor and birth? I guess we can start off. You said you ended up being induced. How did it come to be for that?
Yeah. So one thing relevant, I think, from end of pregnancy mm-hmm. is that I had really severe restless legs.
This kind of yeah. Tell us about that. Yeah.
It was awful. Like, I have gone back and forth and if I'd rather have the puking or the restless legs, and like, I might take the puking. Like, it was just hard to, I couldn't sleep at all. I would stay up like into the like early hours of the morning, most nights at the end of my pregnancy, and then kind of like finally crash. It was tough. And that went on for like a few months, like almost my whole third trimester. That was one of the signs looking back that I was pretty anemic that just got like missed. And we again like tried to treat it with like magnesium and massage and I did acupuncture again, like all of these things. And I think it was just like anemia. I was also like eating so much ice. I was craving so, like, I just ate ice all day.
Do you know how low your blood count was?
I do. Mm-hmm. When I went into labor, it was around 8.
Okay.
Like the iron hemoglobin scale.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And then when I gave birth, it was under 8. It was 7 point something.
Okay.
It was pretty low.
Yeah. Do you know if they checked it? We often check it at the same time we do the blood sugar test. Did they check it then?
They did, and it was around 10 then, so I think the normal range is like 13 to 15, like maybe a little lower for pregnancy is what they told me. And then by the end, I actually had another blood test done to test for cholestasis, because I had like some other, like I had like itchy feet related to the restless legs, and so they ran some more blood work and it was lower then. It was around like 8 or 9. At that point, I think that the midwife that I met with said that dietary supplements would be like the best option for me. She's like, eat your leafy greens, cook in a cast iron skillet. I think there was some concern because I was getting sick again at the end of pregnancy of like me being able to actually tolerate taking an iron supplement without making myself sicker. And so it was kind of hard to manage.
Okay.
But nobody really knew like how anemic I was until labor started. So
Gotcha.
So I was pretty uncomfortable at the end of pregnancy. I was not sleeping well, and I was still really wanting to avoid an induction though. Mm-hmm. Like, I wanted to just go for as long as I could. But as I got close to my due date, I started talking to the midwives of like, well, what would it look like to go post dates? They said at 42 weeks, they would need to refer me out to the OB practice. Like, I couldn't stay with the midwife care anymore.
Right.
And I didn't want to go to 42 weeks anyway. Okay. I wasn't comfortable with the risks of going past 42 weeks.
Right.
And so I kind of started to think, like, around my due date, like, well, if I don't go into labor on my own, I would rather be induced with the midwives than go to 42 weeks. And so we tentatively scheduled an induction for 41 weeks and 4 days, which was like an end of Saturday at the end of kind of the end of the week, 41 weeks to be induced. And they were comfortable with letting me go that long if I did non-stress tests during that 41st week.
Mm-hmm.
So I did ask them to, I hadn't wanted to do membrane sweeping, but I did ask them to try, like, once I passed my due date. I just felt like if I was going to go for induction, I wanted to feel like I'd done everything I could.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
To get labor started. But when they tried to sweep my membranes, she was like, so your cervix is really soft, but is closed. I was like, oh, like not dilated at all. And I hadn't had any early labor, so I didn't really expect to be. But I was just like, okay, well, that's not an option then. And we tried that again, actually, at like the 41 week appointment, and again, like, wasn't dilated at all. So, that kind of takes us, I guess, through the very end of my pregnancy. I was going out of my mind, just ready for this baby and exhausted and all of the things. But 41 weeks, did the first non-stress test, and we did a biophysical profile with that. That was fine. We went back at 41 weeks and 3 days, which was the Friday before my scheduled induction.
Okay.
And the night before had been really tough with like the restless legs. Like, I just remember going into that appointment being like, I've been up all night. Like, I spent the early hours in the morning crying with my husband. Like, aww, it's really seeming like we're heading for this induction that I don't want. And we just kind of had a cry together and came to terms with what was happening. And he's like, well, let's get through this appointment. We'll get some dinner. We'll like tuck in for rest tonight. We'll do whatever you want tomorrow and then go for this induction. And I know you don't want it, but we're going to meet our baby soon. And it's like, okay. But when we went in for the non-stress test, it wasn't as good anymore at that appointment. So 41 weeks, 3 days. I could kind of tell that it wasn't, like, the movements that I was supposed to be tracking just weren't as consistent as they had been earlier in the week. Mm-hmm. And then they were seeing some variable decelerations mm-hmm. from the fetal tracing. Mm-hmm. So our midwife was, she's like one of our primary ones that we saw that day. And she's like, I think we want to induce you right away, actually, given how the non-stress test went. I think it's your best chance at still having a vaginal birth.
Right.
And I was like, right now, I just couldn't. I was like, I just remember feeling like, exhausted. I'm like, you're going to send me to go to labor, like, right now?
Right.
And she's like, yes. So we did. And I think that was kind of the start of, for me, like, motherhood happens whether you're ready or not. And that's been such a theme for me.
Yes.
with our daughter. True. Like, it doesn't matter if you're rested. It doesn't matter if you feel ready. Like, it keeps going at its own pace, whether you want to or not. So,
yep.
Yeah. So we headed over for induction and, it was 41 weeks, 3 days pregnant and, kicked off the labor from there.
And you're tired. And this is, again, not just induction, but like, even that wasn't when you had thought it was gonna happen. So, I mean, what was your mental space like? I mean, where were you going into the hospital? Like,
I was accepting that it was time to get labor started, and I didn't want to I didn't want to go to 42 weeks. I knew it was only one day early, but I was just kind of in disbelief that. Mm-hmm. that it was happening. But I was also excited. Like, I was excited to meet our baby.
Okay.
And finally got to tell, like, friends, family, like, yes, we are finally going to have this baby. Because, of course, they'd all been so curious of, like, yep, we're starting induction now.
Gotcha.
And I had prepped them, like, this could be a long process, right. You know. So I was, I just remember being exhausted but excited.
Okay. All right. So then how did the induction go?
It was long. I got through triage. And I guess one piece is, like, I kind of knew, like, already we had gone over birth preferences with the midwife team. And I really appreciated, like, they set a whole appointment to sit down and, like, go through our birth preferences with us.
Okay.
And I remember the midwife, like, reading it line by line and, like, looking me right in the eye and being like, you know, like, I really felt like she was reading what we wanted.
Sure.
But we had kind of laid out preferences, you know, of, like, plan A, ideal birth. And then, like, if that doesn't work, then this. But I kind of felt like we were already crossed off a few of the things from plan A. I had actually, they have water birth possibility at this hospital. And, they have, like, these huge tubs in the middle of the room, and you can birth in water with the midwife group, and I was open to that. I had signed the waiver to do that, and already with induction, that was, like, not going to be an option. And I hadn't wanted, you know, the IV or all these medications, and just, like, already we're into plan B. It's just taken it as it came at that point. Mm-hmm. They gave me the option between starting with Cervidil or Cytotec for the ripening because I wasn't dilated at all. And they're like, it's really personal preference. And I just remember being like, how would I possibly have a preference about this? Right. I don't know. I called my doula and she suggested, you know, or we kind of talked through, well, like, Cytotec is a pill, Cervidil is inserted. if you have a really bad reaction to Cervidil, like it is kind of reversible in that way versus once you've taken a pill, you're kind of on the roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And that made sense to me. So I agreed to the Cervidil, and the midwife and the nurse, kind of told me, like, hopefully you tuck in. Some people have mild discomfort with this, and see you in the morning, and we'll start your labor really in the morning. So I was like, okay. And they gave me a sedative and a Tylenol, and they're like, sweet dreams. And this was around like 7 to 8 p.m. on that Friday night. Uh-huh. And so my husband and I weren't quite ready for bed yet. We played a game of cribbage. We had packed games, you know, in case we were induced. Like, we weren't ready for induction. We just didn't want it.
Sure.
We had cribbage with us. We played one game of cribbage, which I won. And by the end of it, which is like, I mean, it takes like 30 minutes. And by the end of it, I was like, I was in pain, like a lot of pain. I was really antsy for the game to be done so I could just get up and move around. The nurse came in to check on me. I was doing wireless monitoring for both fetal heart tones and uterine contractions. And the uterine contraction monitor really never picked up adequately contractions for me. And this was kind of the start of that, of like, it was nothing like what I thought a contraction or that early labor would feel like. And I didn't see anything happening on the monitor. And so the nurse was like, well, are you having contractions? And I'd be like, I don't think so. Like, right. I'm seeing this flat monitor. Like, I thought contractions would have like a start, middle, and end, you know, that peak. And this was constant. It felt like constant, like back pain.
Right.
And it was moderate pain. I remember the nurse asking me to rate it, and in my mind, I was like 7 out of 10. And then out of my mouth, I was like, well, probably a 3. Like, I didn't want to like acknowledge. I was like, I'm not even in labor. I kept saying to my husband, like, I have to get it together. I'm not even in labor. And I remember like, I kept digging my fist into my back because I was just like really feeling like a lot of pressure in my back. And it was really uncomfortable. So the nurse stayed with us and kind of realized that I was having some like early contractions, like amidst all of this pain, like there were like little peaks and that seems like contractions. And so she was like, well, I'd like you to move through a labor circuit. And she set up like a bouncy ball and like a yoga mat and wanted me to lean over the tub and spend like 20 minutes in each position. And she was great for a labor support nurse, like amazing. But I just remember looking at her and being like, you have to be out of your mind. Like, I've taken a sedative. I thought I was going to go to sleep. And now you're like, actually, we're going to do a labor circuit. Like, I just couldn't believe. I could not believe what they were saying to me of like, you have to like go through this labor now. But eventually I was like, well, I'm not going to rest. Like, I'm not comfortable. So I put on like some noise canceling headphones and started to listen to some music. And Taylor Swift had just released one of her album re-records, and so I like put that on. I was gonna be in my little zone, and then not even 2 songs in to this, like, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna get in the zone. And the nurse came back in, and she's like, well, so baby is looking really sleepy on the monitor. And this is actually something that I hadn't really heard of in like other birth stories. Like, I'd heard of like decelerations and like other indicators of fetal distress, but I guess they weren't happy with like the movements of the baby. They kept calling, you know, sleepy baby. So I don't know, like, they just weren't
happy. It was probably like the heart rate. We like to see it jump up and down, and maybe it was flatter.
That's what they were showing us, like this like more flat flat monitor. And they wanted me to do an IV fluid bolus for that. And I knew that I had, like, potentially options. I was like, well, could I do something else instead? Could I drink a juice or ice water? And trying to just delay the interventions at that point. And she's like, well, no, like, we really would recommend the fluid bolus. So it's like, okay. So I agreed to that, and I had to sit in bed or sit near the bed to have that done, so it was kind of disrupted in my circuit, but got through it, and baby's heart rate picked up enough that I could you know, get out of bed. And we started walking the halls that night, and it was just ramping up for me, and I couldn't really articulate to anybody what was going on. I did have moments where the pain would like stop me in my tracks, or that I really had to focus and like breathe through.
Right.
But I didn't think I was in labor. Okay. I just thought that I just kept saying like, I'm uncomfortable.
Right.
And I wasn't in active labor. I was just having like a pretty intense response to the Cervidil.
Uh-huh.
And it was really uncomfortable. Okay. So by around like 1 a.m, it's like, this isn't working for me. I need to rest. Like, if you're going to get me into labor tomorrow, like, this has not been a good fit for me with the Cervidil.
Sure.
I want to take it out.
Okay.
And they were pretty reluctant to do that, but a midwife and her student came in, and they could see that I was, like, really uncomfortable. They had brought in the nitrous oxide, too, at that point. They were like, why don't you try resting with the nitrous? And I kind of did, and I was like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to mm-hmm. rest like this. Like, this isn't the right medication for me. I will try something else. Just give me, like, an hour. I need a break. I felt like I was having no break at all. And so they're like, well, why don't we check you? And they did. And it was about 2 a.m. And I remember the midwife saying, like, the exam is unchanged. And I just really remember, like, looking out over the parking garage and being like, I should jump off the roof. Because then it was really intense. Like, it was like, I was like, then somebody will help me. Like, that was the logic was, like, so clear in my mind. Like, I didn't want to, like, die. I was just like,
sure.
If I jumped off the roof, somebody then would give me the medical attention that I need. Like, it was intense. And then just knowing that, like, the exam hadn't changed, like, all night. And it was crushing. Remember feeling, that was the lowest point of my labor. God. Just crushed. Of like, my gosh. Yeah. But something else happened during the exam, which was that they accidentally pulled the Cervidil out.
Okay.
And then they were debating, like, can we put it back in? Do we need to start a new one? I was like, nobody's starting any new Cervidil. Like,
right.
Nothing's going back in. Like, no, we're done with that. It's like, I will start Cytotec in an hour. I just want a break. And they were like, you can have the rest of the night. We'll come back in the morning and get some rest. Like, I just wasn't handling it well, I think mentally or physically.
Okay.
And so I took a shower. I got into bed. I got with, like, the nitrous. And, like, it was really helpful. Although some people had told me, like, maybe don't use the nitrous so early in labor if you want to use it later. I just got a little bit of conflicting advice of, like, mm-hmm. save your pain management
right.
tools for later in labor.
Right.
And then others were like, well, make yourself as comfortable as possible. So I didn't know quite what to do, but I did end up using the nitrous that night. And I'm really glad that I did, because I got into like a rhythm, like a breathing rhythm, where I could like really identify like, oh, these are contractions and they are coming regularly.
Right.
And I timed them on my phone, and they were 2 minutes apart, lasting a minute.
Okay.
For the duration of like the night, that went on to like 6 a.m.
Okay. So did you get any sleep?
I didn't sleep, but I will say like I did have the experience of like deep rest between contractions.
Okay.
Like I got myself set up where like the nitrous mask was near my face and I could mm-hmm. kind of breathe through the peak of the contraction and then like fall into like a little bit of rest.
Right. Right.
But not like dedicated sleep.
Okay.
And my contraction tracking app also kept telling me to go to the hospital. It's like, it's time to go.
It's like oh, I'm here.
But yeah, it was kind of, it was just surreal, but I felt like I was getting on top of it and I understood what was happening. So Saturday was a lot more straightforward. Like the midwives came in and sat with me, and it was a new midwife, and she was like, I was kind of concerned from your overnight notes that maybe you weren't like coping well, but you seem fine. And I was like, I feel fine. Like I was having these contractions, but I felt like I had it under control and I was ready to start the Cytotec. And then over the course of the morning, yeah, I was nervous about the Cytotec, but I think they wanted me to do like 4 doses over the course of the mm-hmm. day, like every couple hours.
Right.
And it was fine for me. So my contraction spaced out like every 5 minutes, like clearly identifiable mild to moderate contractions.
Okay. Okay.
It felt a lot more like what I anticipated early labor would be I could move. I got out of bed. I was in the rocking. There's a rocking chair in the room. I sat in that for a while. I listened to a podcast.
Right.
My husband was resting with me.
Okay.
I would have a contraction and he would kind of like sit up to attention and just like be with me. And then we'd go back to like doing our own thing.
Okay.
And
okay.
It was a good day. Like Saturday was a good day.
Okay.
Our doula came by, you know, I think they didn't want to like be with us the whole time because it's such a long induction, which we were fine with. Like we had such good care from the nurses too, who were helping us through all these things. And my husband as well.
Okay.
But, one of them stopped by to like get us set up with some activities or like things to try.
Right.
A nurse came in the middle of the day, though, or a midwife came in, and she was, like, kind of going through my chart, and she was like, how did you get so anemic? She was giving me a lot of feedback on, like, you should have treated this differently.
And you're like, well, how can I treat something I didn't know about?
Like, I was like, I've been under your team's care. Like,
right.
I don't know what to say.
Right.
Like, I don't know. They told me to eat my leafy greens. And she's like, I never would have treated it that way. And it's like, well, I just was so frustrated. I was like, well, it's a little late for that, isn't it?
Yeah, like, okay.
Yeah, what am I supposed to do?
Right. That's frustrating.
It was frustrating. And then she had also reviewed, like, what had happened overnight. And she's like, I think taking the Cervidil out was a mistake. It's like,
ma'am, what do you want me to do? Go back and
thank you.
Like,
I was like stuck up for myself. I was like, I 100% know it was the right choice for me to take the Cervidil out. So, but I was just frustrated of like, that's not helpful.
Right.
But apart from that, like over the course of the day, Saturday, like contractions gradually getting like longer, stronger, closer together, like you hear happens. And it kind of seems like it was going okay. But we had a couple of instances again with like sleepy baby or like fetal D cells where I think I did one more like fluid bolus that day.
Okay.
And then they wanted me to skip the last dose of Cytotec, to try to get labor moving faster because of the, like how it was going for the baby.
Sure. My girls are 14 and 16, and back in the day when they were born, it was not easy to share photos and videos with loved ones, but now you have a fantastic option available, the Family Album app. The Family Album app was created in 2015 and has operated over the long term to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with loved ones. It's a totally secure personal haven for your family's memories. I love that it's private with no unwanted eyes. Now let me share some of the great features that make Family Album a go-to app. First off, the app automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and see how your child has grown. No more scrolling through endless feeds or searching through folders. Another cool feature of the Family Album app that I love is that you can order 11 free photo prints every month to be delivered to your home starting in August. It's really nice to have some tangible pictures to hold onto or share to document each month of your baby's life. Plus, the Family Album app has unlimited storage and it is totally free. Yes, you heard that right. No more worrying about running out of space when you're just trying to relive those heartwarming moments. So if you're still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, it is time to level up your family photo game with a free photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, it's all one word, download the app, and start creating a legacy of love one photo at a time.
So Saturday night, I was like just barely a centimeter dilated.
Okay.
And it was like my primary midwife was on call again that night, and she suggested getting started with a balloon catheter. And I went back and, like, kind of checked some of the chart notes. I think there's a couple kinds you can get. The notes say Cook catheter. I thought it was called Foley. I don't know.
Yeah, they're two different ones. They work similarly, but they're just designed differently.
Yeah, and I had heard of them before, but essentially the idea being like a inflatable catheter that puts pressure right on the cervix. And so we did that.
Okay.
That was placed, we had dinner and then she came and placed it like maybe around like 9 or 10 p.m.
Okay.
And again, people told me like, hopefully you can just sleep through this. Uh-huh. And again, that's not what happened. Like I couldn't sleep through it at all. And some other, you know, one of our other nurses was like, actually now is usually a good time to call the doula. Like once you've had the balloon placed. So I just didn't know what to expect.
Sure.
Having it placed was pretty intense. Not something that I would want to repeat if possible.
Right.
but for me, it was pretty intense to have it placed. I used the nitrous oxide during the placement procedure. Yeah. And then once it was in, like, my labor picked up really quickly.
Okay.
And really at a new level. Like, the previous night, I was like, well, that really was a 3. This is actually a 7, you know? Okay. Like, it was like, okay, these are intense. Like, these contractions are long. They are strong. They are taking 100% of my focus to get through these contractions. Our nurse who was on that night was awesome. Like, she gave me an aromatherapy patch, and they tried to fill up the tub for me to labor in, but there wasn't any hot water, I guess. So that kinda, yeah, my husband tried to fill it up with, like, a pitcher of hot water from the coffee station, but it didn't work. So we, you know, we tried. I labored with the nitrous. Our doula did come. But those contractions were really intense, like taking, 100% focus to just breathe through them.
Gotcha.
And the balloon came out around like 1 or 2 in the morning. So it was intense, but it was kind of fast. Like I was prepared for it to be in overnight, but it came out earlier, which meant that I was like between 3 to 4 centimeters dilated. And at that point, I'd been there for over 24 hours. So that felt like a huge win. I remember everybody like celebrating like this balloon is out. So they turned on the Pitocin at that point.
Okay.
And that really took my labor to like the upper level of what I could handle, I would say. These contractions were like, I remember telling the midwife, like, these are getting to be a 10 out of 10.
Right.
This is really intense.
Yeah.
And they were on top of each other. I would have like 30 seconds in between. And they were long and they really required me to vocalize through.
Okay.
And I honestly wasn't prepared for that. Of like, I kind of felt like I had to vocalize through.
Okay.
Meaning, like, I couldn't like get Aaron, like I just would like have to like moan through these contractions.
Gotcha. And
my husband said it was like somebody like coming up for air, being like a huge gasp in at the end. And
interesting,
it was hard. I was really, it was one of the things I felt unprepared for. It's just like I just thought I'd breathe through my contractions.
Right,
and I
right,
never
right.
thought like what would happen if that didn't feel accessible to
me. Sure, sure.
And I'm definitely somebody who's forgotten the actual pain of labor, like I really couldn't recall it, but I remember the feeling of feeling like crushed, almost like I just like my
crushed
hurt. Yeah, like a weight like all around me of like that's how it really felt, like being like so squeezed, and I felt it a lot in my back.
They were
intense.
And
around like 4 in the morning is when I start. I remember starting to say, like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a level of labor that I thought would happen closer to like transition of like end stages of labor. Birth is close. And I wasn't close. And I knew that I wasn't close. And I just couldn't imagine like continuing to labor like that for, and you're not supposed to do like the labor math, but it was kind of clear that it wasn't picking up, you know, like quickly enough for dilation. Like I knew birth wasn't close. And I was like, I don't want to do this all day. Into even like Monday, maybe like it's now Sunday morning.
Right.
Like this baby might not even be born today. And so I started talking to my husband, my doula, about an epidural, agreed to like a cervical check. Like, let's confirm like what's going on. And if there hasn't been progress, I'm ready for the pain relief.
Okay.
And so we did that check just before like 5 a.m. and I was still 4 centimeters. Like, yes, everything else was the same too. Like fetal position hadn't changed. Effacement hadn't changed. Like I had labored all night and nothing had changed. And I was like, yep, epidural, I'm ready. So got the epidural. I was pretty scared to get the epidural, but the anesthesiologist was incredible. I just felt like I was going to move during it. And my he acknowledged, he's like, can we turn the Pitocin down? Like, these contractions are on top of each other. And
okay.
The nurse was like, it's off. Like, it's been off. Like, I just had like a huge reaction to the Pitocin and like no dilation from it. It just didn't work for me, I guess. Or like I didn't give it enough time or anyway.
So did the epidural provide some relief then?
100%. Like it was, I felt nothing after the epidural. Like, it worked. I remember it working immediately and I fell asleep.
I was here to say you were probably really exhausted.
Mm-hmm. I was exhausted and like finally just like got some relief. So just fell asleep. And then kind of through the course of that morning, you know, nurses came in and like got me in different positions. I got the epidural probably like, I think it was like 35 hours into the induction. And then by mid morning, we were just getting stuck. We were starting to have like late decelerations on the fetal heart rate.
Okay.
And every time we turned up the Pitocin. And the Pitocin never got past, like, a 1 or a 2 dose. Mm. Like, I was always on a very low dose of Pitocin. I just had a big response to it.
Uh-huh.
And it was really hard on the baby. And so we kind of got stuck where, like, we couldn't turn up the Pitocin. And my body wasn't close to being able to push this baby out. So mid-morning, like, they started to talk to me about a C-section.
Okay.
And I was just like devastated. I really wanted this experience of like pushing out my baby and like, you know, I'd kind of like prepared for like this whole thing and like that feeling of it just sinking in of like this experience that I thought I would have, like I'm not gonna have it.
Right.
And I'm gonna have to do this C-section, which I'm terrified of. But I also knew that like we were stuck. There wasn't we couldn't get labor to progress.
Okay. Oh, did they ever try and break your water?
They did. Yep. Saturday morning we broke my water. I had to have the like internal monitor placed too for contractions like early in the morning because my contractions were intense. Like once they placed the internal monitor, they were like, I think they were tracking at like 2 minutes long. Like they were substantial.
Mm-hmm.
But not producing any like dilation during that either, and just like stressing out the baby. So yeah, we broke water, and I really felt at that point that I was on the cascade of interventions, that it was like, this is everything I wanted to avoid, that's all happening. But I didn't know like anything else that I could have done either. Like I just felt like we were stuck. Yeah, so they sent in an OB to consult with us, and we knew that we were going to head for a C-section, and we were crying, and she came in, and sometimes I get emotional and I talk about her, which is funny because, like, I didn't really like her.
Oh.
Like, I just didn't find her very likable, unfortunately. Okay. Like, but she delivered our baby, and so I have a lot of, like, respect for how she handled it at the same time, but I remember her coming in and being like, no more tears. Like, we're about to have a baby. And I was like, okay.
Okay.
Exactly. Like, no more tears. We're about to have a baby. And, it was like, I didn't love that, but I also think it was kind of what we needed. Like, that energy was what we, like, needed to get through it.
Okay.
And she came and, like, you know, she sat, like, right next to me and explained what was going on. And I think, like, majorly to her credit, she was like, this isn't an emergency. We're just stuck. Like, if birth were imminent, we could, like, crank up the Pitocin and, like, try to get this baby out. But it's not. Mm-hmm. And we have no way to get you there at this point. So C-section is the safest mode of delivery.
Right.
And she explains that they had like a clear drape so they could lower the drape and I could like see the baby be born. And I actually told her like, I actually don't want that. I don't want to see that. I was so scared. And she was like, you know, we'll just see how we feel when we're in there. Like, let's just see how it goes. Like, she didn't say like, okay, we won't do it. She was like, we'll see how it goes when we're in there. So got prepped and got taken back, and I was scared, and I think my husband was really scared, but just kind of had to do it anyway. So the epidural was like perfect. I didn't feel anything.
Oh, good.
Our other doula came for the C-section as well.
Okay.
And it was quick, like it was quick, uncomplicated procedure. Mm-hmm. She did comment on my anemia as we were going into surgery. She was like, oh, didn't eat your leafy greens, I see.
You're like, I swear to God, I'm gonna slap somebody in this hospital if they say one more thing about anemia.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. And I just like, my husband like really defended me in that moment. I was like, look, I really have been trying. And he's like, look, Martha has had a very difficult time. Like, he had just like finally was like, we're done hearing about the anemia. And so I appreciated that. But of course,
yes,
just like,
oh my gosh,
one more person at the edge of like this huge surgery being like, oh, I guess you didn't eat enough leafy greens. And it's like, lady, I have been trying so hard. But so we went back for the C-section, and it was just like a few minutes. I think we started at like 11:15, and our daughter was born at 11:29. They asked us.
Oh, how did you find out if it was a boy or girl?
Yeah. So they asked us to like call it on the way back to the OR, and we both said that we thought it was a girl. And then my husband was able to like call it when the baby was born. Aww. And that's because they did drop the drape.
Okay.
Like the OB did not listen to my preferences, and it was the best thing. It was like the best preference that had to be ignored, because I mean, it was just as like she had described it to me, like I could clearly see that my daughter was being taken out of my body, but I couldn't see anything gory, and it was amazing. Like, I saw her eyes open for the first time. It was incredible. It was such a good decision. I'm really happy that, like, they did that for me. And I just couldn't believe it. Like, that was like, oh, it's been you this whole time. And my husband was like, it's a girl. And, yeah, it was just kind of, it's world shifting, you know? Right. Like, your baby is there, and you're looking right at them, and in that moment, like, really nothing else matters.
Gotcha.
So they, you know, cut the cord, and they got her cleaned up. She had meconium on her. Okay. I had asked them, I was like, they asked if we had wishes they could honor for us during the C-section. I was like, oh, well, we wanted to keep her vernix on. And the nurse was like, honey, she's not going to have any vernix on her. She's 12 days late. Like, she's probably going to be covered in her own poop. And I was like, oh, okay. And she was, which was fine. It's like, yeah, I was so prepared for all these like crunchy, you know, things. And she's like, you know, that's not the reality. So
did they do skin to skin in the OR?
They offered to, but I had another moment where it's like, I couldn't believe that they were trying to give me this baby. I was like, I loved her so much.
Sure.
Do not hand me that baby. Like, okay. I'm not ready. Like, no. They're like, mom, do you want to hold your baby? And I was like, no.
Martha.
No, like, what are you talking about? No, I'm exhausted. I've been through this whole thing. They offered a few times. Like, they really were so supportive. But every time, you know, and then I was, like, I was throwing up at the end of the surgery. Oh, okay. I was, like, really shaky.
Okay.
And
okay.
The throwing up part, the nurse was, you know, trying to comfort me. And I was, like, I've got this part down. I've been throwing up this whole pregnancy.
Okay.
Yeah. So,
okay. So the surgery itself wasn't too terrible.
No, it was fine. Like, I had like a perfect epidural. I couldn't feel anything. I felt sick at the end, but it was like, it was fine. Right. I was anxious for it to be done because I was very nervous to have I don't know, just knowing that you're like open on the table and stuff.
Sure.
I was anxious for it to be done, but it went fine. No complications. Okay. And minimal blood loss, which was good because I didn't have a lot extra.
Yes. And then I guess quickly, as we're getting up on time, how was the postpartum experience for you?
It was incredible. Like I was really well supported. I did have high blood pressure postpartum. That got flagged at a home visit a couple days after we got home from the hospital. They sent like a nurse out. It was part of our care. It was awesome. I had really good care. I was seen at home by a home nurse at 5 days postpartum, 2 days after the hospital. And then I had
was that part of your insurance, or that's what they, your practice? Like where'd that come from?
It was covered by my insurance and part of my practice. It was like, I don't know exactly what the billing is, but it's part of like their standard services is like a home.
I wonder if it's something in your state that I've never seen.
It could be. I know that I have other friends like here locally, at least, who were offered this. I've never heard about like, you know, if this happens other places, but I've had friends who have like declined the visit. They're like, no, I'm good. But we opted into it. I mean, we had to pay like the out of pocket piece of it. But it was covered by insurance. And it was, home health visit for me and baby. So it was awesome. Like the nurse like weighed our baby and like checked out our like sleep setup. And also found out that I had postpartum high blood pressure. And that was definitely a scary like day. We had to go. We ended up in the ER. My blood pressure was like 163 over 115. It was high. It was scary. We were really scared. But it was ultimately treatable. It wasn't preeclampsia. They did blood work. I had like a whole workup done. We had to take our 5-day-old back to the hospital, and it was intense. But I healed, and I'm off the blood pressure medications now. Okay. I was only on them for like a month and resolved. And I like to say that like I had this really difficult pregnancy, but my postpartum was so joyful. Like it wasn't easy. The healing, like physically and mentally, was really tough. But I just felt so supported. Like I had like my husband and family and friends, and I found a new mom's group that I went to, and like a yoga practice that I was doing with my baby, and like I just felt supported that I could like really heal and get through it. And we did have a successful breastfeeding journey as well. And I know that that was a big fear of mine of like after a C-section, what will be possible or like easy for me. And I didn't do skin to skin until like an hour after she was born. You know, I didn't spend that like early time with her. And we had a successful breastfeeding journey anyway. She was on the boob for like 9 months, and then I pumped for a year, and went really well anyway. So
I mean, I'm just amazed at how, because I mean, quite honestly, it to me, it seems like almost nothing went the way that you were intending, whether it was, I mean, you weren't hoping to puke your guts out the whole time, the restless leg, anemia, and people repeatedly bringing up anemia during your labor, and then like, I mean, the induction, and then the pain. I mean, it even postpartum, like having to take your baby back to the hospital 5 days after, that's not fun either. So I mean, just do you think it was the support that just helped you kind of keep going through what our challenge? And I think it's wonderful, but I'm hoping, you know, what can you share that you felt helped you best cope through the challenges?
I think it was the support, because it really was like, I almost had a harder time, I think, mentally after the birth than physically. And it was like, I needed my husband's help getting out of bed, like all of that stuff that comes with a C-section. He helped me with every breastfeeding feeds. Like I couldn't even move her from like one side to the other. I didn't have the core strength. And like, he helped me with every feed in those early days. And we had, you know, the midwives came to round on us after birth, and one of them said, like, you should process this birth. Like, went together and separately. I had a therapist, you know. Okay. She's like, well, it's a lot. Like, what you don't, it's not just like, you know, a medical procedure. Like, you've been through a lot. Like, yes. Make sure you take the time to really process it. And it has been like a lot. I really felt like everybody was placating me in the early days. They were like, oh, you did so amazing. Like, you've been through so much. And I just felt like they were like doing lip service to me of like, you don't know, you know, I felt like a failure kind of like, I didn't have this like physiologic birth, that I had wanted. And it took me a while to kind of get past that. But I was so supported that like, I have so many positive memories from the postpartum period. And I will say that I read a book, like a few months ago, actually, like my daughter is about 9 months old, but it's called Eve. And it's nothing like what it sounds like, but it's a natural history of human evolution through the lens of the female body. And, I just like that kind of content in general. So I like listened to this audiobook and it makes a really like strong case that, midwifery and obstetrics would have been an early adapted skill or like trait in human biology because of the way we give birth. Like, we've kind of always needed help. And that really helped me reframe that birth intervention isn't unnatural. Like, this is part of being human, is having help through this part of life. And it always has been that way. Because I would have a lot of intrusive thoughts of like, well, what if we were in the wild, you know, would we both just be dead? Or like, maybe we both would have been fine and none of this had to happen. Like, and I would get kind of stuck in that kind of thinking. And, reading this book really helped me reframe that piece of it to understanding that intervention is okay. It is overused, but it's part of being a human.
Yes. I love that. And then as we wrap up, what would you say is your one favorite piece of advice that you would tell other women who are about to have a baby?
Well, I always say I would never give advice to a pregnant person because I would never wanted advice. But I will say that, after birth, skin to skin is regulating for both of you, like for both baby and the parent. And it was almost like a medicine for me of when I would feel so really overwhelmed of like my husband would be like, okay, skin to skin. And like, it really is co-regulating. It's not just for your baby. Like, it's for you too. And that continued like well after we came home from the hospital of like having that skin to skin was just so helpful for me.
Sure. Well, Martha, thank you so much for agreeing to come on and share your story. I mean, just so many just points and things to take into account, and just the way you navigate it, what was very challenging, is just really admirable. And I know people are going to learn from hearing your experience. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, of course, wasn't that a great episode? I so appreciate Martha coming on to share her story today. Now, after every episode, when I have a guest on, I do something called Dr. Nicole's Notes, where I talk about my top takeaways from the conversation. And here are my Dr. Nicole's notes from my conversation with Martha. Number one, hyperemesis, nausea and vomiting in pregnancy, it can be no joke, all right? And if you want to learn more about strategies to deal with hyperemesis, then listen to episode 219 of the podcast. I interviewed someone from the Hyperemesis Education and Research Foundation. They have so many research-backed strategies and ways to approach hyperemesis and nausea and vomiting in pregnancy. So do check out that episode if you're having trouble. It's drnicolerankins.com/episode219. Number two is you can want a low intervention birth and still be in the hospital. I get incredibly frustrated when I see doctors say, well, if you don't want us to do anything, well, why are you in the hospital? You can want to be in the hospital because you know that that is the location of all of the advanced technologies. That's where there's going to be a NICU. That's where there's going to be an operating room. That's where there's going to be medications and things available in the event of emergency. Now, just because you don't want those things obviously to happen, you may feel better and more at ease being close to those things if need be. So if you hear any pushback about, like, why don't you want us to do anything, or why are you here if you don't want us to do anything, please ignore that. Please tell them that you are in the hospital because you want to have access to things if needed, not because you are expecting that something has to be done. You can absolutely have a low intervention birth in the hospital, okay? Okay, next couple things. I just really wanted to fight someone about the repeated comments about her anemia. So unnecessary and just absolutely ridiculous. I'm really, really sorry that she had to deal with that, because that was completely unacceptable. And then the final thing I'll say is that postpartum help, I've said this before, it's like a broken record at this point. It's so important in this country, but also so very, very lacking. Yes, you need to educate yourself during pregnancy and birth. All of that is very important, but preparing for the postpartum period is really important as well. And having that help and support available is important. So whether that's friends or whether you have family member there, you can definitely consider hiring a postpartum doula. I've seen lots and lots more folks, if they don't use a birth doula, they're using a postpartum doula. And I think there's a misconception about postpartum doulas that, oh my gosh, I can't afford it, I can't do this. But you'd be surprised at how you could potentially work out things, like where they come maybe just once a week. They don't necessarily have to come every day. They can come once a week and provide a lot of support and education. So do check out potentially having a postpartum doula as well to help you fill in the gaps with that postpartum support. All right, so there you have it. Please share this podcast with a friend and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to me right now. Also, leave a review in Apple Podcast. I love to hear what you think about the show. It also helps the show to grow, and it helps other women to find the show as well. Do come join me live in my next free birth plan class. Sign up. Grab your spot. Spots are limited. Grab your spot at drnicolerinkins.com/birth plan. So that's it for this episode. Do come on back next week, and remember that you deserve a beautiful pregnancy and birth.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.